Hello, and welcome back to yet another episode of Pop Culture Uncovered, the exhausted edition. The caffeine should kick in sometime in the next 30 to 35 seconds, but no, we're going to talk about Loki. First things first, though, I do have a piece of good news that I want to share with you, dear listener. If you have been listening to this podcast for a while, then you know that I'm a dad. And you will find it amusing to find out that I'm going to be a dad again. And this time I'm going to have a girl. So anybody who's got any advice, please feel free to send an email to pcupress@gmail.com. For if you don't think I didn't already order at least 2 girl dad books, I most certainly did. I'm in the process of reading one. And at this point, I've already told my wife, I'm like, look, when I buy her a unicorn, I don't want no drama. But speaking of things that have horns, we're going to talk about Loki.
Whoa.
So
that was sort of kind of smooth.
Hey, man. Smooth as a punch from Baltimore's finest, boy, I tell you. So I'm kind of like borderline fascinated with this show. And the reason why I say that is because I'm suffering from Marvel fatigue. Like, I did not watch Secret Invasion. I didn't care what happened because I knew no matter what happened, it wasn't going to be worth my time investment in watching it. It was officially I'll read what happened on Wikipedia show. So I will just say I have not watched this season of Loki yet, although I'm planning to. And the only reason why I'm planning to is it's the only MCU show I could think of that it does not automatically trigger MCU fatigue as soon as the title runs across my brain. So we have our resident Loki expert, but we're going to defer to her for her to break down this latest episode of Loki and why this show is defying expectations and beating MCU fatigue. Hi, Belle.
Hi. That was a hell of an intro for me. Hi, Pete. Pete's also here.
Right.
Fair enough. This show has been working on a different level than pretty much the entire MCU post Endgame. And it may be hands down the best thing to come out of the MCU. As much as I enjoyed Wakanda Forever and No Way Home, and of course Werewolf by Night, this show is just doing things that the other shows and the other films, to be perfectly blunt, aren't doing. What I mean by that is it's having real conversations. It's not hammering us over the head with those conversations, She-Hulk. It's not, the humor is there and it's important, but it's not the focus. There's not that, one of the things that has plagued Marvel from jump, but especially after the first Avengers movie, was the need to break the scene with some inappropriate humor. I think we all have those moments where it's like, did a joke need to really go there? Did we have to mess up the momentum so you guys could be clever? And while there is humor in this show, and it's very dark, it's not that quip a-thon-ness that has plagued the MCU since Avengers 1. It's also doing a really good job of selling the danger of Kang. It is one of the things that this was deeply disappointing about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania was that while Jonathan Majors was fantastic in it, and everyone did bring their A game acting wise, the writing did not support the threat that Kang was. We were told, and there were moments where we felt it, but it wasn't consistent.
Right. It was in people's reactions more than it was in like his own actual. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And while there is a level of that in this show, Kang himself, from the moment he appears in season 1, and quite honestly, the build up to him showing up through the entirety of season one. The slow build of this man is a very bad man. The dread, as more and more layers were unfolded about who was running the TVA and why it was a problem, was so well done. So that when season two came and we see Loki's pure terror in a way that he wasn't even scared of Thanos in the Loki who died in the main MCU in the sacred timeline, wasn't even scared of Thanos in the way that he is scared of this supposedly ordinary human man. His fear made me afraid. And that is what the show is doing that has sold it so much more, that this is setting up the multiverse saga. And it's doing such a phenomenal job of making you realize Kang is not even the one that we see in this most recent episode, Victor Timely. There are hints of his instability in the episode that make you go, oh, he's not there yet. And he still might be a good man, but I can see how this man is going to turn into Kang the Conqueror. And that is amazing for me. I am really just blown away by how good this show is. I know I'm going into it, as you said, I am the expert on Loki. I probably know more about Loki than any other character that's not Jason Todd, and Essence from the DC universe. I probably know more about this character than I know about any other comic book character. And that's in a lot, because I know a lot about a lot of characters. But that's not what's selling it. It's the show is just that good. It's that simple.
I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Werewolf by Night, because which I will say I think is my favorite Disney Plus MCU project that's come out thus far. But I feel like, based on what you're describing, it sounds like Loki is successful because there's a coherent, clear vision, and that the creatives are given space to execute on it. Like, the thing behind Werewolf by Night that's stunning the first time you watch it is it's really kind of hard to get engrossed in a modern day black and white movie. But when they talked about this year they're going to release it in color, I was like, I don't want it in color. You're going to ruin it by putting it in color. It's perfect as what it is. And I mean, that's very much how I felt about the first season of Loki, where I felt like, okay, like, you know, the Disney Plus shows kind of have a battle rhythm, right? Like, we've seen Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You know, we've seen She-Hulk. Like, you know, there's a feel for them. Like, then they're all trying to be thematically adjacent or close to the regular MCU movies, right? They want to give you those kinds of feels. And Loki, from the very inception, has always kind of been like, we're going left. Like, we understand everybody else is going right. We're going left. Because I mean, I think back to the scene of in season one, where Bell, you'll remember the name of the actor because he's an incredibly iconic actor, but he played old Loki.
Richard Grant.
Thank you. When he has his moment, when he talks about when he's, you know, he's tricking, you know, the Elias, the monster. And it's the, you know, I am burdened with great, you know, glorious purpose. I was like, did somebody call the Simonsons and ask them, could they just straight lift stuff from their run? Because I was like, this is the Loki that I never got in the MCU movies, that I'm like, yes, this is the person that's actually more interesting, because he's not an easily, you know, mustache pink twirling villain. Go ahead.
It's interesting that you should bring that up, because one of the things that we have seen, especially this season, and I don't think we as audience members are noticing it, the characters have not, is that Loki has gotten more powerful with each episode. And I have my theory on that, which is because Kang, as we have discussed previously, Loki is the Tony Stark to Kang's Thanos. Because Kang has interfered with Loki's life, every Loki's life, and some, or I should say He Who Remains specifically, not Kang, because they are different people at this point. He Who Remains has interfered in Loki's life at every point. They are not becoming, they're not fulfilling their full potential. And it's kind of like how in the comics, Loki's powers didn't actually power up until they decided, you know what? I'm not going to be a villain. I'm not going to be a good guy. I'm just going to be 100% me. And so I'm noticing that it keeps his power, their power levels, and it's not just Loki, Sylvie as well. Their power levels have amped up, especially in the last episode. We got more of Loki doing things that Loki should have been doing in the MCU from jump. So my theory is the way they're going to retcon it, which would actually make sense, is that Kang purposefully messing with Loki's life stunted their abilities and stunted their growth. Because if a Loki ever came into their full power, Kang doesn't stand a chance. In episode 2, where he uses his shadows to hold somebody hostage, basically, and keep them from running. We've never seen Loki do something like that. The hand blast, the ability to, the telekinesis that can stop a building was never something that we saw in the MCU proper until now.
I don't disagree with your theory at all, and I think your theory is actually spot on. The only, you know, kind of asterisk I'm going to throw in is it feels like, even going back to like Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, the Asgardians seemed to be powering them up, where like starting with Thor, it was kind of like, you know, like when Iron Man encounters Thor, like there should be like a level of fear, because it should be like this guy's operating on a completely different power level, and it wasn't there. They chose to make all the characters, you know, they tried to create parity, you know, amongst all the characters, and I think that diminished the Asgardians, because it's kind of like, hey, Valkyrie was in the Defenders, and she was basically the Defenders Thor. So she was like, somebody had to go toe to toe. We'll be like, oh, the Wrecking Crew's here. They're super strong. Oh, Brunhilde will take care of. So I mean, I think over the course of, you know, Thor Ragnarok and everything else, I feel like they've been quietly, because they've exhausted all of the weak Asgardian stories. It's like, if you're gonna do Hela, you know, you're gonna put Thor on Planet Hulk. You have to start putting him at like the, I hate to pull like the official Marvel Universe handbook stats, but I'm like, Thor is supposed to be able, like, he's an apex predator in terms of the heroes. He like him and the Hulk can go toe to toe. They're both capable of lifting 100 tons. But the only difference being the Hulk can get strength, can get psychotically strong, and we don't know what Thor's limit is, because when he goes to his damn battle rampage, anything is possible. So I say all that to say, the stuff that you're saying about Loki makes perfect sense to me, because Loki's powers, even in terms of how they've been written in the comic books over the years. When I was a kid reading Simonson's Loki, he was a, you know, he was a magician, but a trickster and a manipulator. By the time you get to the contemporary era, it's like, you really, like, he doesn't have a definable, like, power set. His powers are functionally almost what he needs, depending upon what version of him is operating and what they're up to. And lastly, I'm just going to say, before I kick it to Pete, I love the fact that this is the version of Loki that we're getting, because, see, I loved Loki in Siege. I thought Brian Michael Bendis' most creative moment in Siege was realizing, oh, Loki would actually be the one to sit at the table and undermine everything, because he doesn't want Norman Osborn to be in charge, and he's really not that evil. And he's like, well, there are limits to the evil that I'm willing to allow you humans to get up to. So it all makes good sense to me. And it makes sense that Kang would be a perfect foil for Loki, because they're both masters of manipulation. Kang is very much about inflicting his need for control on everything. I think the thing for Loki was always being validated, having people recognize and acknowledge him. And I think the version of the character that we got, especially after the first season, he doesn't have that same type of emotional need. And I think that's what makes Tom Hiddleston's performance so interesting and puts it in such a unique spot. Because it's very rare to have an actor do a phenomenal job playing a character, hitting all the bells and whistles, and say, now I'm going to take this character in a completely different direction. And this character who was basically an antagonist, I will turn them into a protagonist, but somehow succeed in making them a more interesting character than they were when they were the villain. Which, just not to be hyperbolic, I can't think of another example of that in pop culture. I mean, unless you're talking about like maybe Star Trek, the original series with like the Mirror Universe. That means like that's probably the closest approximation that I could think of. And even then I would have to be like, I love Shatner, but I would give the nod to Hiddleston.
One of the things I think we've said numerous times is in Loki, there's that like need for validation, right? And in this incarnation of Loki, in this show's, you know, version of Loki, he has no one to provide that validation. So it, on the one hand, I feel like it, you know, because he's got no Thor, he's got no anything. He's trapped between worlds, and everyone he cares about, you know, is essentially, you know, removed from him in one way or another, including Sylvie, including, you know, other versions of himself. He is unique among those. And so it's almost like we're watching a character learn how to lean on themselves for validation. And that is the part that has been really interesting to me is watching that, like, what is Loki when Loki doesn't have that need and that just massive amount of baggage or that anchor around his neck, right? Like that to me is what makes, and also what you got to what you've been both saying, like, is what makes, you know, Tom Hiddleston such a good actor, is he's able to play versions of Loki that are so different from each other that they're essentially, they feel like completely different characters. And I swear that's not something I've seen since Orphan Black. And another reason that I'm a little disappointed that She-Hulk wasn't very good.
That's actually the perfect comparison. I had not thought about that, and you're 100% right.
And even though we have like this maybe more healthy, it's hard to say with Loki, like, what's a healthy version of this character, but he is at least minus a lot of that need for validation. He has a partner he's going through these things with. It's not even like, look, I've accomplished this thing, will you finally respect and appreciate me? It's, we're going through this thing, we're bonding together. And even with Thor, we very rarely saw any, you know, partnership with Loki and another character where they're both growing and experiencing things together. And honestly, there's several people he's going through this whole thing with. And so that's what's made this season really fun and interesting. What's, you know, made me appreciate the actors and the acting in this is because even when you have to play a slightly different version of yourself or a version of yourself that remembers something and doesn't remember something else and then the exact opposite, everyone is doing a pretty good job of convincing me that even when they characters don't remember what they've done to one another, they remember the feelings that are left over. And I think, Belle, it's been almost a frustrating thing because one of the things that makes Loki so good as a show is that it pisses me off so much that I am so angry at so many characters that it's almost like I can't, like, first of all, I feel like I need to do a complete rewatch of the first season in order to understand why Sylvie is so indignant and so wounded and so angry, as though everything that is happening in season two is not 100% her fault. And I feel like even the writers, because this is the thing I've said a million times, if the writing won't acknowledge a character doing something terrible and the other characters aren't, it's like you're telling me this is what you genuinely think is true. It's how I felt when I watched Civil War. It's like the Russo brothers absolutely have an opinion. And, you know, not having Tony Stark at his own godmother's funeral is the first is the first clue to that. And this has happened quite a bit in the MCU when it comes to characters that, like, if the other characters don't acknowledge something or don't, like, push back on like Sylvie, for example, trying to blame everything that's happened on Loki instead of the other way around, and if no other character is going to push back on it, and we're not even going to, like, pull back with the director's eye and be like, Sylvie is wrong, then it tells me, like, they have it's so frustrating. I can't tell if they're waiting to acknowledge it or if they're genuinely bought in on this, like, idea that, like, Sylvie had a valid point of view after messing everything up. That's it. A show that makes me angry is a show that keeps me interested.
Yeah. it's so funny because they have started acknowledging it. And I'm like, finally, because I was getting, man, listen, Sylvie has been pissing me off to the point where I'm like, as much as I love Sophie DiMartino and how fantastic she is in selling Sylvie, I'm like, if y'all don't fix this character, she gotta go. I can't take this shit no more. And especially since I'm like, y'all need to either figure it out and have her acknowledge it, and that she is the reason all of this horrible, all these horrible things are happening, or at least have someone else say something. And so when Loki, when she shows up in this episode, and I will not spoil for those who haven't seen it, why she shows up and where she shows up. But when she shows up and Loki goes, yes, because you and your machete have fixed so many things. I was like, freaking finally, like he didn't go in as much as he could have, but he definitely was like, I am. You can see that as much as he cares for her. And what's like he said at the in the finale in season one, he just wanted her to be okay. He's also starting to get a little fed up. And it's interesting because somebody pointed out that for Loki, the events of the Avengers movie happened last month. And that is to see the character, like, and again, credit to Tom Hiddleston and the writers, to see how the character evolves through from the end of the Avengers film, if you look at it that way, to what we see in this show. Tom Hiddleston is showcasing him growing up as a character and going, I will always cause, because there's moments in this episode where he's like, all right, y'all playing with the wrong one. And there's one fantastic moment where his petty came out. And it was so, the petty was so good.
I have loved. I feel like that's one of the things we didn't get out of Loki in season one as much, is because we're watching him just like completely figure things out where he didn't understand anything that was going on. And here in season two, there are those moments where like he's doing the right thing, but when he sees an opportunity to be bad while doing the right thing, like, oh, I can do this thing by being kind of horrible and torturing somebody. That's great.
Great. Yes.
Like, greater good. I will say this, Belle.
It was my favorite thing that happened. I was like, his petty has been on level 20 every episode. After episode two, his petty has been so good. It's beautiful.
I think this season has struggled, though, and I have to disagree a little. They have given him things to do that are new powers that we've seen. None of them feel like bigger powers. It's just sort of stuff like Loki hasn't done this, but he's done stuff on this level, so it isn't that surprising. My problem is when you show that Loki can do something, as a previous episode when he's, you know, chasing someone around the city, he only uses the power sometimes. And I feel like it's a problem that we have with a lot of fiction where you have some people with supernatural powers. It's like every time I watch an episode of the Clone Wars, I'm wondering why Obi-Wan Kenobi doesn't do that really fast force run that he did the first 5 minutes we saw him in episode one. And everything else I've seen, I'm like, where's that force run? And it never shows up. And so seeing Loki do something, and then, like, you know, we have characters who are like running away from Loki or trying to hide in ways that I'm like, man, a normal person would have caught up to them. A normal person running would have caught up to this person. And so I can't tell if he just operates with such little effort because he knows he has plot armor, which is a terrible way to write a character. Or you have to like flex all the powers. And as a writer, you should think about like, okay, if I give him this power, it means he always has it. Or I have to explain why he doesn't always have it. And that's the part where I felt like the last couple episodes, there are things that seem perfectly within his power and skill set that he's not doing in order to sort of serve this long chase kind of plot. And that's been a little frustrating because I'm like, it feels like they've nerfed Loki a little bit and not so much like increased his power. So I go back and forth on that because that's the part where that's the part where it's a little inconsistent. And I'm like, come on, we could do better than this.
Well, I'm just going to be honest for a second. Inconsistency in the depiction of characters' powers and, you know, an overall kind of like power creep are like the hallmarks of the MCU for me. I mean, take the Scarlet Witch, for example. Like,
yeah,
she was doing telekinesis the first time we saw her. And by the time we got to In the Mouth of Madness, it was like, I don't even know what her powers are anymore. Like, it's just an angry god. So I mean, I don't find it surprising. I don't find it surprising solely because of the fact that it's like, look, comic books work because you can retcon stuff in a heartbeat, right? Like, you overpower somebody. Like, I mean, literally, what did they do with Superman? Like, oh, we've had the Kurt Swan Superman for like 25 years, and he's throwing around plans. What are we gonna do now that we've got the John Byrne Superman? Oh yeah, he's weak as hell now. Like, that ain't flying no more.
But it isn't like an eight, you know, we're spanning a 60-year-old, a character's 60-year history. It's like from episode 5 to episode 5 and a half.
I know.
I have seen, if there's one thing that's consistent about the MCU, you're right. It's that. So I shouldn't be surprised. I don't know that I am. I'm just like, it's the one thing that makes me want the show to be a little bit better. But it's a small nitpick, to be honest.
I understand the reason why Sylvie's getting the hate that she's getting because of her incredibly selfish decision to kill He Who Remains at the end of season one. But I will say this about why I enjoy what they're doing with the character, despite, you know, obviously the fact that I haven't watched both episodes in their entirety, is the fact that it allows you to have a clear distinction between Loki and Sylvie. Loki has grown and changed as a result of seeing the events of his normal life and his life in his normal timeline and everything he's been dealing with thus far. So to me, Sylvie is Loki in the first Thor movie. She has not had the opportunity to grow because she has sat in vengeance for so long. This kind of like this her working at McDonald's thing, to be honest, is like Loki's version of pretending to be Odin and running Asgard. It's the first time she's ever had a life. And so I think that's part of the reason why she's so difficult to deal with, because she's not being, because for her, it's like she freed herself from a cycle of violence and being chased and being eradicated. So she's basically like, I'm very sorry that the multiverse is all screwed up and all of y'all are having a horrible day. By the way, would you like an apple pie?
And I would love to see, I think I almost did a disservice to the show and the character of Sylvie by not giving us one of those standalone episodes. They do standalone side episodes in every TV show, and to spend a little time with like Burger King Sylvie or McDonald's Sylvie rather would have been kind of fun, because there is a scene where she comes back to her world that she's been so protective of, but like it's hard to sell that when we haven't seen her care about something other than herself. And spending a little time in like a standalone episode and finding out who the guy on the truck was that was chatting with her would have served Sylvie as a character a lot more. That would have been fun.
It's interesting because to both of those points, I have been thinking that as well, that Sylvie is very much Loki post-fall from when he tried to unalive himself after the events of Thor. And not quite hasn't quite been picked up by Thanos yet, but has had the same level of trauma that Loki was carrying by the time we see him in the first Avengers movie. But the difference is we got to spend time with this character, so we understood, even if we didn't agree with his rage and his anger about being lied to, and we didn't agree with how he dealt with it, but we understood. Whereas with Sylvie, we've been told a lot. And so we don't get a chance to see her be kind. And the other thing is, which is doing her a disservice, and I feel like I get what they're trying to do. I get what they're trying to do, which is she knows that she's the reason everything bad is happening. She knows she is. She knows that she's the reason that the multiverse is destabilizing. She knows that if she had just listened to Loki and stopped, not even, because Loki wasn't even saying, let's not kill him. He was saying, let's think about it and then have some sort of plan if we kill him. Because we can't just do this and then walk away and hope for the best. We have to have a plan. She knows that 9 times out of 10, she probably played, and this is my theory, played directly into Kang's hands with killing him and started the cycle again. All she had to do was choose not to go with vengeance, which is where Loki is already by the time we get to that. So she knows on some level, she knows that she 9 times out of 10 played into, that's why he said, I'll see you soon. She knows she played into his plan.
He set the whole thing up. I just don't have confidence that the writers are going to deliver on this, like, on this dose of, you know, Sylvie kind of just covering for the fact that she feels a certain way.
And that's my concern. Yeah.
Somebody's got to, like, somebody has to acknowledge that. Some of the, like, characters fail to develop as characters when we fail to acknowledge the flaws that we wrote into the characters. Because then it feels like this is just the writer standing for this character in a really weird and unnecessary way. And I don't know if it's that far with Sylvie, because I feel like we're also getting a little bit of that from other characters. And I just want to say, I had no idea Miss Minutes was going to be such an important part of this show. And I'm kind of excited for it. It's a little
weird. I had hoped, and like, all kudos to Tara Strong for making Miss Minutes one of the most terrifying things to ever happen to the entirety of the MCU on multiple levels and in multiple ways. And for those who have not watched the last episode, all I can tell you is, oof, you need to prepare your butts, because holy crap, I was not ready for anything that happened. And I was like, I need a drink. I need a drink and possibly an exorcism and some therapy.
I never don't love Tara Strong, but all it's like, it's everything that's happening is a little too convincing. And
it's a little upsetting. It was the last episode.
But it's completely understandable. It's amazing to take a character that is a cartoon clock inserted and everything else about it is played completely straight. To have this character be like sympathetic and strange and compelling and frustrating and weird,
so weird.
Oh, and I'm and to still be like, and to get like a bump like that on the roller coaster ride, I still didn't get thrown out of the car. Like, I'm still like, not, oh, I'm all still here. We're still not on this all thing. I have no idea where the show is going.
It made everything that was happening, and kudos to the animators as well, because that entire scene on the boat, I was like, oh no. The level of dread that was happening as I watched Miss Minutes' face reacting to what was going on, and my brain went, they're not going to go there, are they? They are. They're going to do the thing. They're going to do, okay, I don't care for what's happening right now. I don't like this. And that was me, like, kind of like rocking in my seat going, I don't like this. I'm very uncomfortable right now. So fantastic work on their part. As for Sylvie, she, acting wise, there's no weak links in the show.
No.
There's just absolutely not. Writing wise, unless we have 4 episodes left, if I'm not mistaken. And writing-wise, I need Sylvie to start making better choices, because her final choice at the end of this particular episode is going to cause nothing but more problems. There was a moment where she had an opportunity to not stop a bunch of nonsense, and her choice to, again, put her vengeance... She put her vengeance over practicality. And that choice is going to cause nothing but headaches, especially because no one else knows what she just did. Loki don't know. Mobius don't know. No one knows, because the TVA can't monitor anything right now, because all hell has broken loose. So no one in the TVA knows what she did either. And so all bad things. And the only other person who knows it is a person you can't trust, which is Miss Minutes. So I'm just like, oh boy, your choices are going to have so many bad effects for everybody down the line. And right. You made the irrational choice because your vengeance was more important. And it is going to cause so many problems. But one of the things I did think was interesting were the parallels, but they really leaned into the last episode, the parallels between Kang and Loki, Sylvie and Miss Minutes, Mobius and Ravonna, because one of the things we haven't really talked about is Mobius and Loki. And also, one of my favorite things to come out of this season is B-15 and Loki being basically little shits together, as an aside, I love any scene where B and Loki just look at each other and decide to go fuck somebody's shit up. And I'm like, excuse the language for anyone listening, but it's literally, there are so many moments in this season where B and Loki literally just don't, there's no words, there's no communication beyond, he looks at him, he looks at her, they both kind of smirk, and I'm like, oh, somebody's about to get the brakes beat off of him, it's about to be over, and I just love it. And that goes to the fact that Wunmi Mosaku and Tom Hiddleston went to college together. And so they have literally decades of friendship built behind that. Everyone, Guga, Wunmi, Sophie, and Tom all went to school together. And you can tell. There's moments where casting is really important. Casting people who went to college together, who have been friends for decades, even if they never worked in other things together, it was so genuinely smart, because now it doesn't seem like a leap from the very hostile B that we had in season one, episode one, to where she and Loki are now. Is, I totally believe it. Well, there's no part of me that doesn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like as a character, like character, writer, actor, like there's, I feel like a concerted effort with B, that from the day one, it's almost like I'm gonna make y'all love me, so it doesn't matter, like like hate me now, but I'm gonna be your favorite character soon. And the confidence that was executed with, I felt like we've been rewarded through and through.
I feel like we're gonna get that with Brad as well, X15. Yeah, I feel like that's gonna be, because the actor Rafael Cassell is such a great actor, and I feel like, and he, there's moments with him and Loki where he's so incredibly incisive, but also like, oh, maybe shouldn't have said that to the person who has the ability to rip me limb from limb, even if they don't have their powers in the TVA. So
he's been a good addition.
Yeah, he's been a great addition. What we're seeing for the first time with this character in a way that we haven't seen in the character on screen and up until the last 10 years in comics is Loki has friends. And that makes all the difference in the world. It's kind of like, if you guys have read the comics, one of the things you should read is Thor and Loki, the 10th Realm, where we find out that Simonson Loki is still running around in the 616 universe, and that young Loki is a completely separate entity. But that old man Loki is trying to manipulate events to turn the Loki that we have into him. But the difference is this Loki, because he's not burdened, while he knows all of the things that have happened before, they're like watching a film. He knows what happened, but they're not his life. It's not his life. And so one of the things that made the difference and why young Loki does not become old man Loki, and what enrages old man Loki in the comic, is that A, this Loki has several friends who are ride or die for him. And Thor trusts him. Thor knows that Loki's always going to cause mischief and chaos, because that's what a Loki does. But he also knows that if something goes down, Loki's going to have his back. And that difference, and most importantly, Odin accepts Loki as they are. One of the best lines in comics recently, one of the things that stayed with me, one of the things that moved my heart, and it's very rare that that happens in a comic book, and honestly in media nowadays as it is there's a moment in Thor and Loki in the 10th realm where Odin says, I love my children. I love my daughter, Angela, who I thought was lost to me. I love my son, Thor, who is so much like me. In some ways, I wish he wasn't. And I love my child who is both. And talking about Loki, my child who can be my son one day and my daughter the other. I love my child who is both. And so that one moment changes the course of Loki's history. And that's what we're seeing play out in the show. Having a Mobius. Having, basically, Loki has his Warriors 3 in Sif. And Casey. And OB, and Mobius, and B-15. He has his crew. And so, seeing the difference of having people who are genuine friends makes all the difference in the world. And I absolutely love that they're exploring that on the show. That is one of my favorite things beyond the world building, beyond the setting up the multiverse saga, the beyond all of that. The biggest thing for me, and the reason why this show hits, in my opinion, hits different than every other MCU show, is that it explores the difference about having genuine friends, people who call you on your mess, but still love you anyway, who are still there for you no matter what. And that is what, to me, makes this show his and tails above pretty much everything else the MCU has put out.
Okay, well, we know how Belle feels. Well, this has definitely been another episode of Pop Culture Uncovered. Join us next week, where I'm sure Belle will trip the light fantastic discussing why she loves Loki yet again. Check us out at popcultureuncovered.com. Search for Pop Culture Uncovered on Instagram and Facebook. We will join you all again next week. Or if you listen to one of our archive podcasts, I'll talk to you in a second. But either way, take care. Be well.